All right, folks, welcome back to the Flagship.com Teacup Podcast, brought to you this week by Adidas Canada and all-new Code Chaos Footwear. Scotty McLeod, how you doing? Have you seen the new Canadian style Code Chaos?
I have. They look sick, actually. I guess they have a whole international pack. I saw a couple different models, but yeah, the Canadian one looks especially solid.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on those. I'm Stefan Tiedorf, your co-host for the T-Talk podcast, and we are really excited this week because the PGA Tour is back, finally. We are heading to the Charles Schwab Challenge in Texas amongst everything that's still going on there. I think people are forgetting, at least it feels like our friends in the States are forgetting, there is still a pandemic going on and the cases in Texas continue to rise. Did you see the video of the guy in Nevada in Vegas sitting at the slot machine with smoking a dart while wearing a mask?
Yeah, that's epic stuff. I mean, yeah, Vegas, I would expect nothing less, but man, oh man, that's some crazy stuff there.
Yeah, it's something else. But let's talk about some golf. I gotta say, I'm giddy. I'm really giddy for Thursday.
Like a little kid.
I am like a little kid. It's coming back. I don't really. This tournament never really brings me much, in terms of, you know, the golf course. I'm not that big of a fan of it. Like, I literally can't remember a single hole. Nothing really stands out. But this week is gonna be my favorite golf course of all time. What are your thoughts going into the week?
Yeah, I mean, excited, obviously, that golf is back. We've had no shortage of stuff really to talk about, but it's nice not to talk just about cancellations more than anything. I think what's neat about this tournament is, you know, it's a storied tournament on tour under its previous name as far as Colonial National Invitational. Now, obviously, the Charles Schwab Colonial Country Club, one of Hogan's hangouts, which makes it neat for me. I love Fort Worth. The cool part, I think, for this week for me is the fact that not only is it the first event back, we've got a whole bunch of players in this field that just didn't play this event before, but because it's the first event back, you know what? They're throwing their hats in the ring.
Yeah, it is like a major field. It is crazy. Dave Stone, who's caddying out for Bo Hogue right now, basically said this better be the most world ranking points you get all year. This field is deep, and it is deep, that's for sure. And I love what they did. You know, it should have been expected, but they stacked their, you know, their
feature pairings
because people are going to be watching. They're going to give you a lot of good TV. And then on top of that, after years of outcries and saying how bad the TV coverage is and so much, like, mic up the players, you know, stop talking. They're finally going to try it out. And, you know, a couple of good names are going to try it out. Ricky Fowler being one, Graham McDowell being another, which, like, you know, if you can just find me a feed, it's just him the whole round. I would love that. But on top of that, I'm going to assume you're going to hear a lot of things going on this week just because of no fans, which the fans really in golf aren't loud by any means, but there's just going to be a lot of talking. After a shot, a bad shot, you usually hear the fans, you know, groaning or cheering, where now you're going to just hear, you know, Justin Thomas in the middle of the fairway being very aware of the swearing that might come out of his mouth and amongst many other guys. I'm really excited for this. It's going to be a unique thing to see.
Yeah, it's going to be a different broadcast because of that, with the no spectators, and, you know, they'll probably put mics in slightly different positions. It's more about, obviously, the mics that are following the players. I would expect to hear more conversation. And I think, too, you know, those last two exhibition events that they've had, you know, we had Ryan Hart on here and, you know, talking about from a PGA Tour perspective, some of the things they were learning from those broadcasts. So from that, from the match, and understanding even for the announcers that, you know, the spectators out there really want to hear the players. That's the number one thing. So hopefully, I know the commentators are going to be excited to get back to work and they're going to want to talk to you. But hopefully we hear a lot more from the players than we have ever before. And that could make it really, really fun for all the spectators.
Yeah, so a couple of feature groups that everyone will probably be looking out for. You have Ricky, Justin Thomas, and Jordan Spieth playing together. Nice to see Jordan getting a little love down in Texas. I'd watch out for Jordan this week. I haven't really looked at the odds. We're going to get to them shortly. But, you know, this guy probably found something, hopefully, with his putting over the next last little while, because his putting is what really let him down, which, and that was his thing for forever, just making bombs after bombs. So I kind of have high hopes for Jordan this week, but your face is saying something different.
I just, you know, his putting has actually improved. If you've actually looked through his stats, it's actually been the tee ball that's actually hurt him. So I know that pain. Yeah. So if I look through and I look at his accuracy stats, they've been poor, but strokes gained, he's been good as far as the putter. And I think that's been masked a lot, you know, and that's your perception that you would see too, because a lot of the commentators had been talking about it because they expected everything to go in. But I mean, if you look at the actual stats, he's been okay that way. But you know what? Any chance to play near home for any player is usually a good one. And although he can have obviously friends and family and things out there, it's a familiar ground for him. He's got a win there. He's had a couple of T2s in the past. So hopefully you're right. He's a guy that, that can show well there. And hey, that other group, you know, that number one, number two, number three group, I don't think you can really ignore them either.
No, Bryson, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose is out there. Phil, Kevin Na, Gary Woodland out there. It's going to be good. Who's Rory playing with this week?
It's Rory, Rahm, and Koepka. So that's the 1-2-3. Okay,
group. My bad. Yeah, that's a group. That'll do.
That's okay, yeah.
That'll do. I would have... See, on the PGA Tour, what I'm doing the first two rounds is Bryson and Koepka have to be playing together. How are you not doing that?
Yeah.
Like that... Bryson, Koepka, is Patrick Reed in the field? Throw him in there with them.
He is, but I don't think he's in the featured groups.
Oh, thank God. but that's like, if I want some drama, get those three guys going, but you know there nothing would really come of it once the mics are on. Canadians in the field, Adam Hadwin in the field, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes. Speaking of Corey Connors, his caddy, Kyle Peters,
yeah,
posted a video of him getting the COVID test. Man, yeah, that swab goes deep into your
it does.
Your nasal.
And I think that's
there.
His second test, because I think he took one on Saturday. I think I was following his social or whatever. So they had one that was sent to him or whatever. So he had to do one then, and then obviously had the swab that was on video. Which, man, it certainly looked like it tickled the back of his head. And
yeah,
I'm sure at some point we'll talk to him about that.
I asked him if it hurt. He said it wasn't that bad. He said it was a 2 out of 10, but it's just like when you kind of get hit in the nose, immediately your eyes start to water, which, yeah, I don't know. I think he's just being a tough guy, but
I think the other side of it too, though, is, you know, just think about it. These guys are going to have to do that every week now. I mean, every week. So it's not a case of, you know, a lot of people get one test and they're sort of done, but you know, this is going to be part of their gig now. So they'll probably get used to it after a while.
I just want to know, like, I have, and maybe this is a prop bet, and I'm sure there's a prop bet out there, like player to test positive or someone to come out positive. Like, you know, you could get it this week. And if you're only testing at the start of the week, and that, like, how often are they testing? Are they testing it throughout the week? Because it takes a couple days, right? You know, like if somebody gets it on, say, Wednesday, and then they play the whole tournament, you could have 20 guys go down. Right.
Yeah. So they've got Sanford Health doing it. They've got three technicians in the portable trailer. They can do a test every 5 minutes. It takes them 2 to 4 hours to get the results back because they're doing it isolated there. And basically they expect to do, you know, the 500 tests for the people that are involved there just the one time during the week. Obviously, if somebody shows symptoms, I'm sure they'll redo that. That testing trailer comes in on the Saturday, and then we'll head out on the Thursday and head to the next site from there. But it's got to be a concern. I mean, I looked up Tarrant County where the course is located, and certainly there's a substantial number of cases in that county. They're obviously going to do their best to isolate these players as much as possible, and not having spectators is certainly going to help. But it's an unusual circumstances. There's certainly going to be some people that are maybe critical of it coming back, or should it be back. But on the other side of it, you know, there's obviously a lot of supporters that want to see it happen.
Absolutely. Well, looking at the odds real quick, and we have the top 20 here. Is there a name that pops out to you that you like, whether it's a good value or just whether it's just somebody you actually think has a chance to win?
Yeah, I think I look at those top guys, and I mean, a lot of them have played well there. Brooks has played very well there in the past. He's had a couple of low rounds in the past there, but you know, I don't think I can get past Sanjay. I mean, he's going about 24-1, and we're high on Sanjay, and you know, he's been playing a bunch. You know, he wouldn't stop playing, really, hanging out in Tampa. Obviously, Albin Choi, Canadian, on his bag as well. So I'm kind of liking that one a little bit. The one that makes me chuckle a little bit here is, you know, Bryson's in at 27-1, And I'm not sure if he's going to be going Hulk smash on every tee box around Colonial. I'm not sure that's going to be a good fit. So I'm eager to see whether he shines or he stalls. We'll see what happens with that one.
Yeah, I really like Kevin Na at 33-1. After all this stuff, like, your ball striking is never, it's not going to be great. I assume that, like, a lot of these guys probably haven't been able to practice that much or into their normal routine. Kevin Na never strikes the ball well.
No, but he's defending just champion too.
Yeah, he just putts unbelievably.
Yeah.
Defending champ, 33-1. The putter, you know, I'm sure he's got a sweet putting green wherever he lives. The putter's going to be probably on fire. Want to see him walk a few in. I really like that bet. The one I hate is Ryan Palmer at 50-1. Is just that is awful. Ahead of Gary Woodland. What do they know about Ryan Palmer that I don't?
Texas, close to home, loves that golf course. His caddy is the multiple time club champion there as well at Colonial, so that never hurts. It's Ryan Palmer in Texas. I don't know. I wouldn't be shy on that one at 50-1.
All right.
And he bombs it too. So
that's fair. Let's go over a couple prop bets that are out there. The over under worst opening round score, 81.5.
Wow. Wow. Par 70, 7209. So, I don't know. Somebody who's probably a sponsor's exemption is probably going to fire one of those up. And I think we're going to get that when we discuss some of our own little bets later on of who that might be to shoot that 81.5 or 82, yeah, probably.
So are you taking the over then?
Yeah, I'm taking the over. Somebody's going to get in the trees here, not be able to handle it, end up firing some 83 or 84.
I would love that. I'm going to take the under. I can see an 80 happening. I can see multiple 80s happening. But 82, you know, these are the best players in the world. There is an amateur in the field. There's a couple sponsors invites, like, Patton Kizzire, who's still a great player, but, like, I don't get that sponsor's invite. But he's not even the worst one. Bernard Langer out there. You're going to get into a couple. But, you know, it's just a couple odd ones, a couple names you won't recognize. So, yeah, I could see an 82, but I'm taking the under.
All right, fair enough.
The next one is over-under best opening round score of 64.5.
Oof. Again, these guys are good. Koepka's shot a couple of 63s here before, but we're still coming off of, you know, a huge break. Mm-hmm. So I think I would have pushed that number a little higher. So I'm taking the over on that one.
Especially the opening round, like these guys are going to have, they're just not going to know that the routine is going to be so different. I don't think people realize, you know, how routine like these guys are on a Friday, Thursday afternoon, a Friday, yeah. Like same thing. They go get there. And now you can't do that. You can't just show up to the range when you're fresh out of the gym. Can you even go to the gym? Are they even going to have a gym on site? Like, there's so many thoughts I haven't actually looked into. So yeah, I'm taking the over on that one. The over under cut line at +2.5 is the last one we'll go over before we go over the final. We have one more after that. I apologize. But over under 2.5. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I would go with that. I mean, again, it's going to be a little scrapey as far as these guys getting out there. The scoring, because it's par 70, you know, you've got not as many opportunities with the par 5. So I would say I wouldn't be surprised to see that cut line drift to +3, +4.
Yeah, no, so. I think that's a good bet at the over. All right, so the last one we want to go over, and actually we talked about this with Michael Gligic when he was on the podcast, about what happens when you win a tournament, yeah. Right? So they actually have odds where you can bet on this. So odds, what the winner does with his caddy to celebrate his winning putt on the final green. So you got to pick one. One is the virtual high five / fist bump at 2-1. Two is the handshake at 3-1. Three, a hug at 4-1. And four, the elbow shake at 12-1. Which one are you taking?
I'm going for the hug. I mean, these guys are tested. They're, you know, they're exchanging stuff with their caddy all week, back and forth for, you know, 4 days plus practice rounds or whatever. I'm sure they're not going to care at that point. Probably they're going to assume that the other person is negative, and if they've won the Colonial, they've won the first tournament coming back, and the mini major, we'll call it, they're going for a hug.
Yeah, I agree with the hug. Unless one player wins, if Matt Kuchar wins, he will do the virtual high five. Oh shucks, look at me, I did it. which, you know, we all know is...
I haven't even looked. Is he in the field?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think I saw his name in there. But if he wins, that's what you're going to get. A lot of fun prop bets, but I decided, and I kind of gave you a heads up, that I'm going to make my own prop bets.
Yeah.
And this is going to be called Stefan's Most Likely. So I got five of them here.
Yeah.
From the field, and we're going to give our thoughts on who's most likely to do this and why for a couple of them. Okay, so all right, the first one, most likely to withdraw, why?
All right, I kind of dug around here. The cool part for this is it's a little bit easier because there are players that are in this field that have not played here in a while, and they probably don't play there because the golf course doesn't suit them. A lot of dog legs that are kind of shorter. So some of the, when I say shorter, I mean the dog leg corner is a little bit shorter, even though it's a long hole. So some of the longer players don't always do well here. The players that get a little wild. I picked Bubba Watson. He's 178th in driving accuracy. I know he can shape the ball, but I think Colonial will frustrate him. As best as I can tell, he hasn't been at this event since 2008. And when he was there in 2008, he made the cut, but he shot plus six and finished in 72nd place. So I think Bubba's your guy who's just going to be frustrated first couple days. You know, he's going to be a little rusty, batting it all over the park, and he's just going to pull the chute early.
That's fair. I'm going with Shane Lowry for completely different reasons. I don't know if I've seen Shane Lowry since he won the Open. He's had all this time off to continue to celebrate. He is now going to hold the claret jug for 2 years, which is a problem. It's hot down there. I saw Abraham Answer out there playing with Dale at 90 degrees with a lot of wind. I'm citing his reason why of heat exhaustion for pulling out for Shane Lowry.
And you know what? I'm trying to think of the name of the place. There's a bar downtown in Fort Worth that has about 600 beers, and I think he'll probably be holding court there.
So. That's fair. All right. So the next one I got is most likely not to make the cut.
Oh, I think that one's an easy one for me. I mean, I dug through looking at the sponsors' exemptions, and David Frost, senior tour player, obviously who's won this event before, has not played a Colonial since 2013. 60-year-old, averages 260 off the tee.
That is insane. For anyone's ever walked a fairway on a PGA Tour event, they are rock hard.
Yeah.
I hit the ball nowhere. I think I carry it around 245, 250 on average. With that, I'm probably getting to 280 if I'm hitting the fairway every single time. 260 on those fairways means he's bunting them 235 carry.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Great golf swing, great, you know, striker of the ball. Love his wine, but I don't think he's making the cut. I'm sorry. And then when we look at the over under for the high round, it could be him.
I like that. Okay. I'm going a different route because this is what I do. I like to just joke around, but I'm going with Dustin Johnson. We watched him in the first match out there earlier this year, the TaylorMade Tribal for Relief. One thing's for certain, he won't forget his golf bag, but he clearly has not been practicing. He's not going to really care. He's just going to go out, do what he's got to do, probably miss the cut. He's probably like a guy that I wouldn't be shocked if he shot 78 the first day, and you know, you get your usual, oh hey, just wasn't my day out there interview and move on. But I especially when you can't really bomb it over those dog legs around there, it's not gonna work out that well.
For and there's a few of them that turn left as well, and that's not really his shot. So I wouldn't be surprised by that one.
All right, so most likely to get fined due to no fans and extra microphones.
Look through the field. Definitely a few guys that, you know, are prone to say a few things that might get muffled a little bit. But I think Pat Perez is a leader in the clubhouse for this one for me. Does not shy away from a fine. And I think, you know, whatever's happening, he'll tell you what it's like, whether it's good or bad. So hot mic on him. I think the producer for the broadcast will definitely be watching that one for sure.
he's also probably in the last question too, most likely not to make the cut. Yeah. I don't see Pat being dialed in. I'm going with Ian Poulter for this one. Poultzy has been fine when there's no mics around for the things he can say. So when there's one right around him at all times, it's pretty obvious Poultzy's going to have something a little offside. All right, next one. We got two more most likely to wave at fans that don't exist.
It's no-brainer. I think no-brainer. I mean, if you think of players that go out there and you know, nod to the fans a lot and sometimes just do it without even probably thinking about it, got to be Philly Mick. I mean, lefty, I think that's your pick too, probably. It's a no-brainer. He's just going to do it. He's just going to, you know, reach up and have a little wave, give a little thumbs up. He's going to turn around. He's going to be giving a thumbs up to a tree at some point during this event. And I sure hope they get it on film.
To be honest with you, I think Phil's in on the joke. I think that's the,
probably,
that's
right,
the thing. I think he knows what's going on. He knows people are watching. And I think 100% it's Phil. It's going to be hilarious. I can't wait to see all the memes afterwards. All right, last one. Most likely to see a noticeable weight gain.
Oh, boy. You know, we talked about this many podcasts ago. We were talking about what could happen when players were away. I mean, my first reaction was, besides Bryson, but Bryson's an easy one because we know he's been bulking up. So if I have to go for a player that, you know, maybe likes to have a good time and is probably not going to be in the gym throwing around weights, got to be Rory Sabatini. I mean, you know, not a big guy as it is. So any extra pounds are definitely going to be noticeable. And I think he's the dude.
I like it. I'm going to give you three players. Two that like, I don't even know if you'll actually notice it. You'll probably just think they always look that way. Mark Leishman's a big dude from head to toe. Shane Lowry, again, you know, yeah, why above. And then I'm going with Pat Perez as well. His hair is going to be flowing out there, but his barrel is going to be flowing out.
I wonder what the over under is on the number of beers those three combined in the last 10 weeks.
Damn.
That would be a crazy, crazy bet.
I couldn't even put a number on there.
No.
Well, also other golf returning this week. The Korn Ferry Tour does return. Just a quick shout out to a couple former T-Talk guests that are playing in the field this week, with Gligic out there, Pendrith out there as well. Where are they playing this week, Scotty?
They're actually at TPC Sawgrass. They're playing the Dye Valley course. So this is not the one that you usually see for the Players' Championship. This is their other course, which has been used in the past for tour qualifying. It's definitely a hard course, one that is a little underestimated and doesn't get seen by a lot of people. But, man, this was a crazy event. They had 264 players in the Monday qualifier, and you basically had to shoot zero to get in this. And then they're hosting an event again next week at the same place, so they're going to keep everybody there. But it's nice to see Gligic, Pendrith, Hearn, Stenson, and Mike Weir's in the field. So yeah, nice. It's at least we've got some Canadian rooting interest here.
One of the craziest things I saw is Martin Piller is an alternate for this event. This guy's one win away from having the most wins, or tied for the most wins all time on the Korn Ferry Tour, the Nike Tour, the Web.com Tour, whatever tour you want to call it. Which people are probably like, how many? Like 30? No, it's like, you know, if you're winning that much, you don't stay on that tour. Yeah. And he's kind of bounced back and forth, but he already has six wins out there and he's an alternate in the event. It's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. I think he ended up getting in through the Monday, I believe.
There you go.
So, but yeah, only eight players out of 264. You know, we had a few Canadians that were in the Monday.
264 players in a Monday qualifier.
For eight spots on two courses. Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Well, and also two courses is like questionable as well. You know, like there's so many weird things, but hey. And, you know, luck of the draw, I guess.
Yeah, closest Canadian, I think, was Blair Hamilton. He shot six under, was tied for fourth for a little while on the one layout. And then, you know, six under was no good. I think, in fact, seven under ended up being no good. So it's crazy. I mean, you know, you feel bad. I mean, guys like Brad Fritsch, you know, drives all the way down there from the Carolinas and they take their shot. You better love what you're doing to go down there and take that risk to get through those Monday qualifiers. Just those odds are so stacked against you.
Yeah, one of the major shout outs we have to give out this week though is to the Korn Ferry Tour and something amazing they're doing for awareness. So Scotty, why don't you break it down what they're doing this week.
Yeah, so on both the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour this week, they're going to leave the 8:46 a.m. tee time vacant. That's in tribute to George Floyd and to support efforts to end racial and social injustice. And then they're basically going to have a moment of silence under that. So, you know, it's good for the PGA Tour to be recognizing that. And that's an appropriate way to do it. And the fact that, you know, they're leaving the time open to, I think, really symbolize openness more than anything and openness to change.
And I like that because I think one of the things, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but I think one thing, you know, both you and I agree is we can't stop talking about this. So if you're looking for us to stop, you're listening to the wrong podcast. And we have to continue the conversation. It cannot stop. It can't just be something that you think of and you post your black square on Twitter and Instagram and that's it. You got to continue these conversations. So I love that. I hope they continue doing that every single week and until, you know, changes have been made. I wasn't really aware of that until you and I started talking. And I think that's huge. I'm really proud of the golf industry for even thinking to do that.
Yeah, Jay Monahan, you know, made some discussions about it, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, and obviously had a discussion with Harold Varner III. And you know, they're looking at different ways that, you know, they can promote this and to promote change and promote, you know, inclusiveness as well. And anything they can do is better than nothing, obviously.
I agree 100%. Well, it's probably a good time to bring in our feature interview this week. We have Lawrence Applebaum, the CEO of Golf Canada. You know, golf has been going on in Canada for a while, but there's a lot of other things to talk about with Lawrence this week. Obviously, we just passed what should have been the Canadian Open. Actually, this week marks the 1 year since the last one and made my PGA Tour caddy debut, not even knowing how to read a yardage book. Yeah. So that 1 year ago, crazy how time flies. Feels like yesterday. But a lot of other things we want to talk about in the CP Women's Open coming up, and also what Golf Canada plans on doing to help make golf more inclusive. There's tons to talk about with Lawrence, so why don't we bring in the CEO of Golf Canada, Lawrence Applebaum.
This episode is brought to you by Adidas and the all-new Code Chaos footwear. Chaos lives here, so you must expect the unexpected and harness chaos. Break free of tradition and drive yourself. Inspire your game with the high-performance design of the Tour Performance Spikeless Adidas Code Chaos Golf Shoes. Every step is light and energized, each swing secure and confident. Experience Chaos Traction and Twist Grip Hybrid Spikeless Outsole. Chaos is here. Visit adidas.ca to learn more about the all-new Code Chaos footwear. All right, we want to welcome to the podcast the CEO of Golf Canada, Lawrence Applebaum. He's been with the organization for 3 years now, seen a lot of things happen in those 3 years, and we appreciate him coming on. Lawrence, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and nice to see and hear both of you. It's a little known fact that my first round of golf that I ever played with this role was played with none other than Scotty McLeod leading me around the golf course. Was a cold, rainy, and wet day at Royal Montreal, but a pleasurable day nonetheless.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Scott never mentioned that. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your golf game before we talk and all the work you do, because
he's got game.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, as you move up in this industry, the more you go in the industry, the less you get to play. How often are you playing? And why don't you describe your golf game to the listeners?
You know, it's interesting. The only thing I can remember is the first hole from that day. And it was exactly which shapes my golf game. My first shot in this role was one of the best drives I've probably hit in my life. And I had the respect of Scott. I had the respect of the executive director of Quebec, J.P. Beaulieu. Richard from Ovation Media was also rather on a foursome. And then I proceeded to chili dip the wedge into a sand trap, sculled the wedge over the green, chip, chip, putt, double bogey, and let's move to number two.
It was a great drive, though. It really was. it was a great way to drive into the game and then for us to connect as well and realize that we had met probably 20 years before that when you were doing some work with Nike. But, you know, I think Stefan gets to a good point there. The fact that, you know, you are a golfer, you are somebody that's involved in the game. You're not just a figurehead. So, you know, that's probably important to you as well to look at everything that you do in your job as a golfer as well, right?
Well, I love the game and have loved it for a long time. And probably the thing that tethers me to the game, which for so many others does the same, is the challenge of it. And I have a deep love for it and a passion. And most recently, as we've all been in home and isolating in COVID-19, is a rediscovering of practicing of the short game in the lawn. And just recently, as things opened up here in Ontario and demand coming back so like ravenous, it's just been super fun. I've played a bunch of nines and 118, and it's been amazing.
Well, for me, it's comforting knowing that, you know, you do love the game, you work on the game. A lot of times with, you know, you get CEOs of big corporations, you know, if you think like the NHL, like Gary Bettman, for example, never played hockey, you know, what came from baseball background, right? So it's important that, you know, you have that love for the game. But how hard is it to balance the fact that, like every other insane golfer, work still needs to be done, but knowing that, hey, you know, I might be able to call this work if I sneak out a few hours early and hit up the course.
Well, it's funny, Stefan. I was in sporting goods for a long time. So always the code word was, and that's where I met Scott, was product testing. Got to do some product testing, which I always loved. And I think it has, for many years, it was a sort of the badge of honor to say how much you didn't play because of how hard you're working. And I will say that is part of the DNA in the Canadian golf industry, journalists, media, industry people, associations. People work, they're working hard. But in the last couple of years, in particular the last year and a half, it's just been great to see people getting together and playing together and bringing new people to the game. And so it is great to see all of the people that we work with and see a lot. And we've tried to make those events surrounding our big events be about playing together. And that's been a lot of fun.
So, you know, 3 years now you've been in this role. Obviously we go from that first drive in when we were playing together to, you know, this point now. What have you learned in those 3 years about golf in this country, even though you were a golfer, but, you know, you were away for a while, you were working for the WTA, you weren't in this country. And, you know, I know from the start, you said one of your missions was to get around and see as much golf in this country as possible. What have you learned from those 3 years?
Well, it was interesting. I'd been away almost close to 6 years in the US and living and working in Florida, and which is made it sort of topical for everything that's going on. And before that, I'd spent about 5 in Canada. And coming back was amazing for my family. My kids are now almost 17, almost, and just turned 15. So to be with their family, to be with their grandparents a little was just a really nice focus for us. Coming back to Canada was a chance to reconnect maybe coast to coast. And at the beginning, I probably maybe went a little bit too hard in trying to see, you know, it's close to 100 clubs in 100 days. Now, I didn't have boots on the ground in 100 of those clubs, but met with the ownership or management of people who ran those golf courses. And that just got things off to a good understanding of how broad and diverse our country is. When you think about it in the filter of COVID-19, in Western Canada, especially in many parts of BC, golf courses never closed. And they've done an amazing job out there in managing the pandemic in a really, really appropriate and high degree. And then you go right across the country and what's been going on in Alberta, who've been similar in timing to Ontario and Quebec. the prairies, you know, Saskatchewan being one of the first to open up, even though they still had snow in the ground when they were in some parts of the north. And then what's going on in the bigger marketplaces, Ontario, Quebec, some of the challenges in Quebec with the big cities, and then in Eastern Canada. So it's more complex than I remember, to be quite honest. I dealt with retailers and marketplaces across Canada, but it's a complex mix. Golf can be complex, and I think many times that it is filled with people who passionately care about the game, and that's been heartening as well.
So what is the factors that make it complex? I mean, you've got a variety, obviously, of a lot of different facilities, a lot of different interest in certain different markets, as you said, you know, BC, and the fact that, you know, they're not really closing most of the year. A lot of these facilities are year round. But what are the real key things that jump out for you that really make it more complex than maybe what people think it is, if they haven't been around the country to see what the landscape is like?
I think when you say that, Scott, it makes me think that golf matters. It matters to so many folks. We in the industry know golf, we tout it as being the most played sport in Canada. It puts about $15 billion into the economy, has over, 300,000 people employed. But we've got 2,300 facilities in the country. And about just close to 1,400 are members of Golf Canada. And these are big groups of people who love to golf, who have passion for the game, and it matters to them. For many, it matters to their physical and mental health. It matters to their recreational life. It is a big focus in what they do. And I think about you guys. You think about it all the time. It consumes you. And the joke that always goes over really well in the U.S. is we've got these 6 million golfers and we've got a 10-day window to play golf. So we so much in those 10 days. But it matters. And I think that sometimes you always have to sort of ask yourself is the perspective that people are coming at, what matters specifically to them?
So how does that make things harder for you guys? Because obviously you have a mandate, but you only have a certain amount of staff and, you can only run so many programs. So how do you be significant to these people and be important to them or play a role in what they, what they think about when they think about the game of golf?
Well, we did a lot of work in the early days on strategical work and for many people is, we just have not been a relevant organization or as relevant to the golfers at large. And we wanted to become more relevant. And our goal has been to be an organization of impact. And we sort of set out our mandate as an organization is we wanted to be a world leader in golf. We wanted to get back to our fundamentals, which was to increase participation and excellence in golf. We want more people to play more often. And for some of them, and I'm talking about our junior development, our young pros, our amateurs, we want them to play better. I desperately want both of you to play better, but we leave that in the hands of our friends at the PGA of Canada to help you get better and yourself, Scott. But we know where our role should be and our mandate continues to be to grow the game.
And one of the areas, that golf needs to grow the game and, be remiss if we didn't talk about everything that's happened down the States and, the Black Lives Matter movement and the anti-racism movement. But, golf has a long history of not being the most inclusive game, especially if we look at Black people of color. What is Golf Canada doing now and what are their plans to do to ensure that is a market that we tap into and we make sure our game is inclusive to everyone?
Yeah, it's incredibly timely and it's something we've spent a huge amount of time in the past weeks in particular and listening to voices that really matter and people who have a real perspective that we're trying to learn from. And Golf Canada has taken a position to to engaging. We've had really strong individual conversations with our organization, our staff, our associations to try and understand perspective that you're talking about. We've made progress, and I'm very proud of some of the progress we've made in diversity and inclusion. And I would say in particular in the last couple of years, we've had a bigger focus on a gender level, on gender inclusivity. And I think one thing that we're coming out of this this really impactful time is the listening and the pivoting of us working on the racial inequalities and the diversity of golfers that we need to listen to more. And as I said to you before, on talking about what we try to be, is we want to be an organization of impact. And we don't just want to nod to the times or check boxes. We want to make an impact. And so we're doing some really important work in assessing that at the moment. And we're going to continue to come forward with a more inclusive game for everyone.
That's awesome. And it sounds like what you're doing is really trying to educate yourself and listen and learn and have your whole team learn. Is there one thing of late that you feel you've learned about after listening and educating yourself on these various topics at large?
You know, I'd say I probably learned the most from our staff. And as we sort of talked about off the air, is I'm about to hit 50 in the coming year, and similar to Scott, and we feel usually most people personally feel like they've got a pretty good perspective, an individual perspective, and it is now becoming apparent to me that when I talk about the 80s and people have not yet been born in my staff, that there's some perspective to be learned, and those conversations have not only been learning but interesting, but they've given me the perspective from them coming in our organization, and especially those individuals who identify themselves as either visible minorities or racialized Canadians, to understand that perspective, that they see the sport a little bit differently, or the opportunity for the sport in a different way. And that's really heartening, because it shows that we have people who care so deeply, as we all do. And also, the face of Canada has not always been represented in golf, and we need to do more work. We need to do better, and we're trying to.
That's awesome, Lawrence. It's awesome to just recognize that and know we can do better, and recognizing our past. And, you know, I'm proud to be a Golf Canada member, knowing that's where we're heading. No easy transition from that topic to our next topics that we have here, but today, I guess, marks the 1 year anniversary of the RBC 2019 Canadian Open, and we should be playing the RBC Canadian Open this year at some point, but unfortunately, with everything going on, that's not possible. How hard were those conversations, leading up to the cancellation after such an amazing year that 2019 was?
Well, I'm based in sort of southern Ontario, near Oakville, and so we're quite close to Hamilton here, and the weather's been amazing, and I'm thinking about that week that we had in Hamilton, the Hamilton Country Club, just sort of shone as a true 100-year-old test of golf, and we caught lightning in a bottle that week. We had the weather, we had Rory, we had great concerts. What RBC did in putting our event to another level with the concert series and Team RBC, it just all came together. So amazing, and it was a great memory. The sad part of it was that we were tracking as late as February towards the greatest, all the great metrics that we measure, you know, attendance and sales and tickets. And we had just announced two great bands in Chainsmokers on Friday and Keith Urban on Saturday. I had run into Rory McIlroy and his team just at the beginning of the Players. He was so excited about coming back. He couldn't say enough great things about the national championship in Canada. So here we are, everything is rolling together. And then we just hit this coronavirus wall that has been debilitating on so many levels. So it's been hard for the staff. It's been hard for our partners. It's been hard for our volunteers. You know, we almost have 2,000 people signed up to volunteer at St. George's and Islington. Like 2,000 people book a week of their vacation or time off or away from their families to volunteer at RBC Canadian Open. And then we were headed for north of 100,000 fans again. I know we were going to probably be in that area of 100,000 fans coming down to St. George's and watching, people like Rory and DJ take on the epic track. And of course, the advanced media day. I mean, St. George's is, I spoke with the general manager this week and he said it's in the greatest condition that most of his members say they've ever seen. They've done some renovations. They've done some bunker work. It's immaculate. And so we'll have to pause until 2021. And we'll just have to, our tournament director, Brian Crawford, told me today, the counter says 364 until next year. So we're going to start it again.
So, I mean, you know, obviously you have a pause. You don't want that pause, but how do you look ahead to 2021? I mean, people are going to be that much more pent up. They're maybe that much more excited to, you know, to get back and celebrate the nation, celebrate, you know, national champions and crowning a national champion. Do you try and just gear yourself up as much as possible for not only that, but for the CP Women's Open as well, which, you can't really probably say much right now, but, might be a great event as well, especially to us and down this way.
Well, I think it's been a bit of a groundhog day for many of us in these last few weeks. You know, you're going through your routine, you're getting into a rhythm. And I think that's provided a little bit of solace at this time. We've had so speaking about the RBC Canadian Open specifically, is we've had so many people who've said they're sad, they're disappointed, but they're with us for next year and we'll roll forward. And that includes both St. George's and Islington Golf Club, which we're really excited about returning. But it also includes the city of Toronto. And as you can imagine, the city of Toronto has been, it's been challenging, big market, big metropolis that has a lot of things to deal with the COVID-19 crisis. But the PGA Tour, and I can't speak more highly about what they're trying to do in trying to get a sense of professional sports normalcy. And as you both know, they're starting this week in Fort Worth at the Charles Schwab Challenge. And a tournament director with Canadian roots, probably you guys, I don't know, I'll ask you, Scotty, do you know Michael Toth? Do you remember him from his Golf Canada days?
I do, and his dad used to be my TaylorMade rep. How's that? So I knew Jack as well.
No wonder he wasn't playing the Titleist clubs that we thought he had.
No. But yeah, I mean, do you talk to him? And you know, obviously it's a while away before, Canadian Open and the RBC Canadian Open in 2021. But, you know, do you reach out and talk to him as a resource and some of those tournament directors? I mean, Ryan Hart, who's been on this podcast as well, another Canadian, and learn from him and them about things that may relate to your championships.
Well, there was an article about the Canadian in charge of restarting the PGA Tour. And so for a second, I'm like, of course, I knew that Mike was the tournament director there, but I thought they might have been talking about Ryan Hart some of the roles that he has with the PGA Tour. But they were indeed talking about Michael Toth. And we shared a communication, an email exchange earlier this week. And if I had asked, here's your field, DJ, Rory, JT, you know, everyone under the sun is there. I said, would you have taken this field in a heartbeat? And the sad part for him is his sponsors, his fans, all the things. It is a very challenging environment, I'm sure, to work in. I've heard from the PGA Tour that the testing is going very well. It's a privatized testing, so they're not taking any health out of the marketplace, away from people. Privatized health, they're doing it. It's going well. And Andy Pasdar, the chief tournament officer, or the chief operations officer, I would say, said, you know, it's time to play ball. And, you know, our fingers are crossed that everything goes well and everyone's safe and healthy. But it's exciting to have PGA Tour golf happening.
We can't agree more about that. No. I said I was giddy about Thursday morning. Hopefully my boss isn't listening. I don't know how much work I'm going to get done this week with that on the TV. And the LPGA isn't that far around the corner. And obviously, you know, Golf Canada plays a huge part in the CP Women's Open and had a great one last year and a great one the year before in Saskatchewan. And this year we're heading to Vancouver. How are things looking for the CP Women's Open in 2020 at this point?
Yeah, one of the things that we've been lucky about, and also our team has really done great work is raising the level of the CP Women's Open and making it a championship that's worthy of people's attention and worthy of these incredible athletes that come to Canada for one event a year. What's great to hear is the commissioner, Mike Wan, he says, it's a focus. It continues to be such a focus on LPGA Tour player calendars. As you guys know, we get somewhere between, you know, 95 and 98 of the top 100 players. We have an incredible track at Shaughnessy Golf Club. I mean, I think it will blow people away what that golf course looks like. And you guys probably remember it back from the last RBC Canadian Open there. The challenges that we're having with the CP Women's Open are the same challenges we've been having with any professional sports event. At the moment, we've got a hard border, essential services only, and we have a mandatory 14-day quarantine rule and self-isolation. And while I can see now that might work for a team environment, you know, a hub, an NHL hub or an NBA hub, if they decided to choose Vancouver, of which I know that's been in a conversation, hard for a tour event for players to come in early, self-quarantine, stay and then be held to that once they leave as well. So we've been in super close contact with government officials. Both the health minister and her office have been superb in British Columbia. And also the tourism minister, we had conversations with her office, the assistant deputy or the deputy tourism minister, Asha Bhatt. And we're staying close. We're hopeful, but it's a challenging environment. And I think first and foremost, with health and safety, no one wants to see to put anyone at jeopardy. So we're going to have to continue to watch the space. I think we'll have certainty closer to the end of the month.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is you know, is there a timeline where an announcement, a go time, will be you know, one way or the other?
Yeah, you know, we're hoping, we want to give some people some certainty as soon as possible. We also want to do everything within our power to try and figure whatever we can out. The LPGA is coming back, as you've seen, their updated schedule is later next month. They had it was a challenging part of their schedule, going to Europe, going to Central Europe or France, and then also then going to Scotland. So before they come back, so we shall see. And all I can tell you is that these folks out at Shaughnessy and the city of Vancouver have been awesome partners. And, you know, along with our title sponsor, CP, they just want to do the right thing for the health and safety of fans, players, partners, staff, volunteers, and we'll get it right and we'll see how it goes.
So further on that note, you know, you mentioned corporate partners. I mean, you know, this environment is certainly not going to be an easy one for a lot of corporations. I mean, you've got some good deals in place with some key sponsors, but you know, you still need a lot of supporting corporate sponsors and stuff as well. So, you know, how does that work for you guys within Golf Canada? I mean, you're going to have some challenges. You know, these tournaments, especially on the LPGA Tour, PGA Tour, purses are coming up, you know, they're getting higher. You need that corporate sponsorship. So is that a concern for you guys right now? Or, I mean, you've obviously got to be thinking about it, but, you know, are there implications from COVID-19 for you guys?
Yeah, I think our first thoughts are about this. COVID-19 has been you know, financially crushing for so many folks, and we're certainly engaged and mindful of everyone's corporate situation and people's personal situations as well. And a lot of our partners have gone through extreme efforts to get through this time period. I'll talk about our title sponsors, CP and RBC. Both of them have been just spectacular. I mean, I would say that seeing what RBC has done and supporting their staff, supporting their organizations, the charitable work that they're doing, the support for this from being not only Canada's largest bank but Canada's largest employer has been outstanding. And we continue to work with RBC. Not only for 2021, obviously, but they're a really big part of the CP Women's Open and Golf Canada as a whole. CP, as a logistics provider, you know, you start to think about those folks that really have to be frontline, and they, as railroaders across the country, have been frontline workers in keeping us moving. And I've been, you know, in contact with a number of folks over at CP and Keith Creel, the CEO, who loves his golf as much as any of us and loves their involvement, has been steadfast in his support of the event, his support of their charitable work with CP Has Heart, and just keeping the railroad moving. And I'm pleased to see also the marketplaces responding. So we're really happy to see that. What the three of us are also concerned about is our golf endemic partners, people like Titleist FootJoy, who are starting to recover, a really slow start, a really challenging moment, challenging probably for deliveries, but now starting to really hit their stride. Our partners at Levelware, who really have were on a really great rise and have been amazing supporters of the event. And then our other folks who partner with us on Team Canada, like Adidas, like Puma, and Cobra, who have been great partners. And what we're seeing with the endemic partners in the golf space is these people are coming out of it. They're coming out of it. And I believe, I don't know what your opinion is, the two of you, is golf's starting to feel like it's thriving. You know, one of the only recreational sports you can do. And I'm curious to hear in your hometowns what it feels like over in the 613.
Yeah, 613 needs bigger parking lots right now. How's that at the golf courses? It's I was at a golf course earlier today, and literally they had cars parked down their laneway, which, you know, makes me smile, makes all of us smile, and makes us also wonder, you know, what are the opportunities here after, you know, for Golf Canada, even after 125 years? These are a lot of new golfers that, you know, can come to the game. We might only have one shot at, you know, keeping them in the game, but it's still an exciting opportunity, I think.
Stefan, how about you?
Yeah, for me, I have buddies that, you know, weren't playing much for the last couple of years, and this is all they got, right? This is like, let's get back out. My one buddy sent a video of his terrible golf swing today on the driving range. But the cool part about the video is his 7-year-old daughter's over there swinging a golf club for the first time. I wonder if that would have happened without this happening. So obviously we would switch it all back for the lives we could save. And you know, I don't think that's anyone in the golf industry wouldn't say that, but it is a very cool opportunity for us to grow the game and use our voice. And as you said earlier, grow it to a different audience, an audience that maybe wasn't represented, or an audience that just never even thought about playing the game in the first place. And for me, personally, it's just nice to play golf with some of those buddies that introduced me to the game a long time ago that just haven't had the time in years past because of everything else going on, that, you know, life's a little bit simpler now. So we're able to get out together and have those laughs that brought us together in the game when we were, you know, 20. Now, you know, 10, 15 years later, here we are.
Yeah. We use this phrase, this silver linings phrase of, you're exactly right about the health safety side of it. And, you know, it affects me personally. You know, my mom's in a retirement home and they've been on lockdown for weeks. So you start to feel what some people are really going through, some tough, very tough times. But as we all try and do is we try and look at the optimist side, and it's kind of like the Silver Linings playbook. This is a moment for golf. This is a moment of recovery. This is a moment where we'll thrive. And later this week, along with our partners at the NGCOA, PGA of Canada, the superintendents, and the club managers, the Canadian Society Club Managers, CSCM, we're going to be putting out a playbook about from a golfer's lens, all the things that you can do or being done for golfers, scoring, handicapping, tournaments, events, what you can expect operationally, a playbook to bring people to golf, where the conversations that you might be having with your partners or your kids or your family about golf being a safe activity. Operators are going out of their way to make it a really great and seamless experience. So this playbook has been the work of the whole golf industry, you know, really pleased to see everyone pitching in together. And, you know, the operators have been doing it for weeks and weeks and weeks now, but we felt we needed to address the golfer lens. You know, how do you get together? How do you feel comfortable? And you talk about your buddies, you know, those guys or guys and gals that were playing co-ed softball or playing beach volleyball or playing or going to the gym. They're not doing those things. There is very few places where there's ice in rinks and water in pools. So golf's got to be that place. We can take that place of getting Canadians back to recreational normalcy. And we're very excited to be a part of that and excited about maybe some of the good that's coming out for golf.
I agree with you 100%. I would leave it there, but we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the 125th year anniversary of Golf Canada. As I said earlier, I'm proud to be a member of Golf Canada. I know Scott's proud to be a member of Golf Canada and a golf professional for Golf Canada as well. But for yourself, how proud are you of Golf Canada and reaching this amazing milestone of 125 years of golf in this country?
Well, when we do think about some of the things that really we will miss out on this year is it was getting everyone together for the 125th anniversary at the RBC Canadian Open. We were going to be gathering all of our Hall of Fame members as we always do. It's a great day for the media. It's a great day for us to talk about the history of our game, the history of our association, and I will put the test to Mr. McLeod. We had plans to have our 10 founding golf clubs, and I know that he will not be checking
looking the other way.
His Wikipedia play. So he is looking away. I can confirm. But let's see at the 10 founding clubs, what you can get, because there are two that are have interesting histories.
So yeah, I'm fortunate because I live in the town where one of them is, so I'm gonna leave that one to last. So I'll go Royal Quebec, Royal Ottawa, because obviously that's where it happened, Ottawa Golf Club at that point. Royal Montreal, Winnipeg, Toronto Golf Club. I should know more than this. Kingston is the one I'll go for sure, because that's probably one, you know, I live not far from where that club was, and a lot of people don't know much about it. They don't know the first Canadian amateur champion, Tom Hartley, actually came from that Kingston club.
The fifth member was Scott McLeod in 1895.
I was going to joke. I was waiting for Stefan to jump in and say, hey, how was that founding in 1895? How was that ceremony? Was
ceremonial t-shirt, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't hit it, but
he topped it like he usually does.
So I think I can pull off six or seven, but I'm not, the 10 I would have to think about.
You got six. If you keep working sort of into the center of the city, you get Rosedale, of course.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Hamilton.
Okay. Yeah.
London.
Ah, right.
And it's London Golf Club, you know, right. And then the last one is a bit of a surprise, is the Victoria Golf Club.
Okay. A classic. If anybody ever gets a chance to get out there and play that, it's a wonderful golf club.
Well, the two that have these great histories is one is the Kingston one, which, you know, better than me, the evolution of, you know, Berryfield Commons and.
Yeah.
But the other one is Winnipeg. And, okay. We have a board member by the name of Rob McDonald, from Winnipeg, and I had to get him to walk me through the interesting history of the evolution of the Winnipeg Golf Club. So yeah, it was a great moment. We will still celebrate. We still have a number of things, top 125 moments, 125 golf clubs, a lot of things that we're going to do a little bit later in the year when maybe people are a little bit more right place to be celebrating and taking everything in. But it's a special time. And, you know, I do just want to say a shout out to all the folks who are working at golf clubs and operating golf clubs who are making a safe environment for everyone. It's our frontline workers in the health and medical and safety industry are doing an amazing job. But as we try and get back to some sense of normalcy, it's those folks across the gamut who are helping to bring golf back. So a big thank you to everybody out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more we can say beyond that. We really appreciate you coming on, Lawrence. It's always great to talk to you. It'd be nice to get back out on the golf course and finish the back nine of that front nine that we started, maybe at Royal Montreal, who knows? And we wish you and everyone that works at Golf Canada the best as we move forward.
Okay. Well, thank you to both you fellas and for keeping everyone informed. And it's been a pleasure to see you both. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Lawrence Applebaum for joining us on the podcast. You know, I said in the interview, I was proud to be a Golf Canada member after a couple of his answers. I've always been proud to be a Golf Canada member. But leaving that podcast, just knowing how great of a guy he was, how genuine he is, and that he's just a golf nut like every one of us, that made me really excited. And knowing that, like, a lot of times we have these big corporations where the CEO is just a really good business man or woman. And they not necessarily tie to the actual thing they are leading, where, you know, this is a leader that, you know, is a golfer. He's a golfer first. Right. And that's what's really cool to me. It has me so excited. And I'm just, said proud of where Golf Canada is going and the initiatives they have. And I was really happy he came on the podcast.
Yeah. I think he values his team a lot. He leans on their experience. He knows he's been in the role for 3 years. You know, he's been in the golf industry, in and out over the years. So he gets a feel for that, but you know, he's also willing to admit what he doesn't know. And he allows his team to help out and fill in with that. They're partners as well. And you know, that's sort of the vision you have to have, because you know, it's a big country. There's a lot of golfers, as he mentioned. It's really hard to sit there and just be on top and think you can just run the show in your own vision and your own mind. So thoughtful answers for him, and we certainly appreciate him coming on. So
I agree 100%.
All right. I'm going to bring up something. Yeah. Sure. You know, I think you almost got away from it so far, but I think we talked about a little match on the podcast with our guest last week, and you didn't really say anything of how that's went.
No.
With Josh Whalen.
I didn't bring it up. Ugly golf. Wasn't the best golf by either of us. 10 strokes. He gave me 10 strokes as we agreed on the podcast. I think we touched on that. And I used every single one of them. I won the front nine. So
wow.
Won a beer on the front with a big par on the ninth hole. I think... you know, he had a, I forget what happened, and I think it was a par net birdie, like something disgusting like that. Like,
did you like kneecap him or anything on the first tee? Did you like bring a baseball bat or something?
No, I went one up early too. That was huge. Went one up early, missed a kind of a 3-footer on two to go to keep one up. The flag was kind of moving over my ball and driving me crazy, and that's my excuse. And then I think I was down 2 at one point, came back to win the 9 by 1, and then on the back 9, he beat me on the back, but on 18, I par net birdied a, I believe, less than 500-yard par 5 for a par net birdie to win that hole. He couldn't find his ball off the tee. It didn't really matter at that point anyway. So we tied the match. There is a rematch happening on Saturday. We're going out again to play, so maybe a little bit tighter. We'll see what's on the line at that point. But I do know Josh is playing. There's a tournament happening in our area. Brought to you by the Toronto Players Tour, which is really cool. A lot of local pros in Ontario all over coming to play this, which is exciting news to see. There's some place for him to play, and I know he's really excited to just have somewhere to, you know, to something to look forward to, something to prepare for. And we kind of talked about that a lot on the course.
Yeah, Russell Budd, who played Latino America Tour from Toronto, went to DePaul. He was going to be doing some work for the Mackenzie Tour, PGA Tour Canada this year, but obviously their schedule is canceled. But he's decided to put together a series of events, mostly going to be one-day events around the Toronto area, but he's kicking off with this two-day event at Black Bear. And it's not only pros as well, men and women, some amateur play as well. And I think up to this point, he's over 80% sold out for the event. There's everybody from Team Canada members to Symetra Tour players to Mackenzie Tour players. So it should be interesting. And yeah, we'll cover that a little bit on the podcast next week.
Yeah. So that's happening at Black Bear Ridge, the site of my Sunday round, which I
had playing too much golf,
which I had 3 pars, no birdies.
Maybe not enough golf.
3 pars, 3 fairways. There you go.
Ouch. All right.
Josh, if you're listening, I need 12 strokes.
Is that going to be a thing now? It's like Stefan takes on the podcast guest?
Yeah, well, we were supposed to actually. There was a lot of talk about Ryan DeVoe, Dez, coming out and videotaping it. And it sounds like Ryan had a busy night the night before and never really showed up to document anything on the Saturday. So maybe next time we'll see Dez out there, and maybe we'll have Stefan versus going forward. Could be a fun little game of content. One of the cool things about that interview is how Golf Canada, you know, was looking at becoming more inclusive and giving, you know, they talked about how gender was a big place they looked at in the past, especially the ladies game. And I think it's very important to this podcast. We love women's golf. And, you know, the Evian Championship, unfortunately, was just canceled. So there's their first major championship gone. But of that, you know, which is obviously something that's, you know, really crappy, but Justin Rose is doing something awesome with his wife.
Yeah, they've stepped up and they basically created a series of events, 7 events that are going to be played in the UK. They called the Justin Rose Ladies Series. It's begin June 18th is the first event. I think he's put up about 35,000 pounds of his own, got some other sponsors involved as well, and basically just wants to create some opportunity for players that are, you know, not playing right now as far as the LET Tour, the Ladies European Tour. A lot of these players are sitting there doing nothing and they need some opportunities to play. The European Tour is having a 6 series event starting in the UK. And he and his wife, Kate, have stepped up to do this. Apparently there's going to be some coverage on Sky Sports as well. And I think that's one of the neat things is a lot of this stuff is being, you know, it's organic. You know, it's basically not being done just for the sake of, you know, putting a rubber stamp on it and say, you know, let's get some credit. It's genuine. I mean, he knows what it's like to be a young touring pro when he started out, who, you know, wasn't making many cuts, so didn't have much success. And he puts himself in their shoes as well. And then, you know, he and his wife go ahead and create this series. So anything like that, I think is, I think it's great, especially, you know, it comes from the right place in starting it.
Yeah, especially when they're heading to Royal St. George for one of the events.
Yeah, not bad at all. Supposed to host
the Open this year. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool. Awesome with Justin Rose. And you can watch him this week at the Charles Schwab making his return. I'm sure he'll be talking about that at some point during one of his press conferences. And hopefully he plays well and we're able to hear a little bit from Justin. Justin's he's underrated for me in the sense of like a likable guy. Other than having, I don't know how he does it, he can find the worst pair of sunglasses than anyone. Like, I've worn some bad sunglasses, ironically, but on purpose, where I think he thinks he kind of looks cool in most of his sunglasses, and he looks awful.
Some of them are huge. Yeah. Huge. They're bigger than him, but hey, whatever. He's you know what? He is a nice guy. He's a genuine guy. And the fact that, you know, he's recognized this and recognized that there's a gap in the market. And, you know, just like Russell Budd is doing with that Toronto Players Tour, stepping up to do something about it, not just talking about it or complaining about it, but, you know, putting a foot forward and putting some money behind it as well.
I agree 100%. Well, why don't we grab a quick break and then we'll hit everybody's favorite thing, the mailbag. I don't know why I said everybody's. I just made that up, but we're going to hit it anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Adidas and the all-new Code Chaos footwear. Chaos lives here, so you must expect the unexpected and harness chaos. Break free of tradition and drive yourself. Inspire your game with the high-performance design of the Tour Performance Spikeless Adidas Code Chaos golf shoes. Every step is light and energized, each swing secure and confident. Experience Chaos Traction and Twist Grip Hybrid Spikeless Outsole. Chaos is here. Visit adidas.ca to learn more about the all-new Code Chaos footwear.
Welcome back to the mailbag. As Stefan said, he thinks it's everybody's favorite segment, but it's certainly a lot of people's, and certainly we got a lot of email that came in this week with lots of questions. People are really getting out to the golf course, and they're curious about a lot of different things. So let's start with this one. With bunker rakes not around these days, do you think within a group it would be better to play it as it lies, allow the golfers to rake with their feet and place the golf ball, or just treat it as ground under repair and drop outside the bunker? So I guess this is just a situation of, hey, you've got your people that you play with. What's your preference?
Yeah. How I thought the rules were was preferred lies in the bunker, no closer to the hole. And I think that's the best way to do it. I've had many awful lies. I actually had two in the same bunker during my round of Black Bear. We're literally in a footprint, took it out, placed it where I wanted to, hit it out, and by hit it out, hit it into the lip, back into the footprint. So absolutely, just I think that's a much better way. Taking it out of the bunker isn't, you know, the bunker's there for a reason for the amateurs like all of us. It makes it difficult. So it's up to you at the end of the day. If you're not using it for handicap reasons, who really cares? But if you want an honest handicap, keep it in the bunker. Just find a place that's fair, I guess.
Yeah, I know the option is an option that they can make the bunkers ground under repair. I think we actually have a rule book column with our buddy Rich McLean coming up in the next issue that sort of addresses this a little bit and some of the modifications that are allowed under the rules of golf. But I like the fact that, you know, you just go in there, maybe sweep your feet around, get a bunker lie, and then play a shot. I think within my buddies, and I think that would be the way you'd go about it, unless for some reason the bunker is so dreadful because it hasn't been taken care of that you can't play a shot out of there. But I think it's right just to have to, if you get in there, you have to sort of play out in some way.
I agree.
All right. Question two. Someone asked, how does one become a PGA of Canada member? I guess I'll address this one. There's basically a whole route that players go about if they want to become a PGA of Canada member. If you can go to the PGA of Canada website, and it really lays it out how the process is. And really it starts with a playability test. It's determining, you know, what your level of play is. That allows you to start the process to become an apprentice professional. Then there is a series of courses and things that you have to take, some mandatory core courses that the PGA requires. And then from there, there's some optional ones as well. And the process for most people takes a minimum of at least 3 years, but you're given an option of more time to do it as well. But you also have to do some industry hours, which obviously is very important to make sure that you know, you're working in the industry, you're getting some experience as far as those hours are concerned. And mentorship is a big part of it as well. So there are some core courses that you have to take. You have to do some teaching courses, some courses that are governed by the National Coaching Certification Program for an intermediate and beginner golfers that you have to go through and be certified under. But yeah, there's definitely a larger education component than most people think. This program has changed a little bit in the last couple of years, even from when I took it. But generally, you can expect that there's a fair bit of education. It's not a matter of just saying, I'm a pro and away you go. And, you know, that's a good thing. You get to be certified, and you know that when someone sees that PGA of Canada stamp, you've got somebody that has a certain level of training.
Yeah, which for me, you know, I'm going to say this because I'm not a PGA of Canada pro, but I'm going to say this for all of them. If you do not see somebody, if you see somebody advertising lessons and they are not one of these, avoid that person at all costs. The other routes, there's a reason those other routes are cheaper. There's a reason they are quicker. You know, follow the person that this is actually, they've invested 3 years to actually, you know, there's a reason it takes a while. We don't just want everybody in that wants to teach golf. I want the right people in. So avoid these other, I'm not going to name these other, you know, memberships you can be.
Yeah.
Find the PGA of Canada, or if you're in the States or wherever, find your PGA member, go get lessons from them. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, we're not saying that they're the only people in the world that can teach, but it gives you a certain stamp of approval. I certainly know some people that are outside of the organization, or outside of the organization, that are brilliant, that do great work, that are great coaches, but they're certainly the exception, not the norm. So the PGA of Canada stamp at least gives you some sort of idea of a standard, and as a result of it, it's something that you can trust.
Yeah, let me clarify. What I mean by is the driving range in the middle of nowhere that's like behind a barn, and it says... Bert Stanley is giving lessons, pay what you can. avoid Bert. There's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, you definitely have to have some sort of training and knowledge to know what you're doing. You know, you can't just be a good player. Coaching is totally different. And this is just from a lesson standpoint. Some people within the PGA of Canada are not teachers. They're people that are run facilities. They run food and beverage operations, all sorts of things. But certainly it does provide some clarity for people when they're looking for people that are dedicated to the industry. All right, number three here. What is the worst feeling golf club you have ever hit? Well, that's pretty subjective, but why don't you give that one a whirl?
Yeah, so fun fact. Feel is made up. Feel is sound. If you ever hit two golf clubs with like actual industry earplugs or something where you can't hear sound, they you don't feel anything. It doesn't exist. And people are like, oh, I would feel it. No, you wouldn't, because I've literally done it at the driving range at Ping. They put earplugs in and said, here's our Forge club, which they were making at the time, and here's our Cast club, which Ping's known for. Everyone's like, oh, Forge is so soft. Forge just makes a different noise. It's all it is. So what is the worst sounding golf club I've ever hit is not people. A lot of people, and maybe you're going to say this, the old Nike square Sasquatch driver. A lot of people think
I've got one. If you want one.
No, I'm okay. They weren't even that bad. It was the old Cobra drivers.
The 440 SZ, the high pitch super one.
Yeah. It went through your, any orifice in your body is where it felt like it was going through. It was painful. We actually had a rule at the store I worked at where you literally, if you came in to test a club, because at the time it was, you know, we still saw some, if you want to compare, you got three of those and then move on to the new stuff, because you just couldn't stand it. People would think like a bullet was going off. So that is the worst sounding golf club I've ever heard.
Yeah, I can actually remember being at a driving range and hitting one of those and immediately seeing the people like all in front of me in the range just turn around right away, because they were just wondering, you know, who got hurt and what kind of rock hit what car, right? For me, I mean, those would definitely be in the realm for the high pitched end of things, because again, you're right, it really is sound is feel. The other side of it would be the lower register ones. And if you can remember the Callaway C4 all carbon head driver, it was before their FT3 series. This thing was just a dud. It just did not perform well. And from a feel perspective, there was no sound when you hit it. It just was like a solid block of graphite. So it just didn't have any resonance at all. And it was probably the one where you sort of hit and went, ooh, and didn't matter what happened when you looked up, even if it was a good shot. It certainly wasn't one that made you feel like, yeah, this is a golf club I want to have in my bag for a long time. All right, on to number four here. We got a bunch this week. How often should you change your grips? That's a pretty common question, but why don't you tackle that?
Yeah, we've touched on this before. I believe they used to say every 30 rounds or something like that, which doesn't actually necessarily matter. If you grab your golf clubs and you leave them in your garage for 3 years and not play, yeah, they're going to be destroyed anyway. So if they're peeling, if they're slippery, you know, let's get them replaced. I probably replace mine once a year in the middle of the summer, just because, you know, I'm picky. At one point, I was picking them, switching them twice a year. But yeah, you just, they're the only thing you have, that's touching the golf club. You might want them in good condition. People don't switch them often enough. Let's say that.
Yeah. And I think too, you've got to notice that the fact that it's not about just changing your set. You got to look at the clubs that you use the most. So a lot of people, especially if they hit, you know, a lot of wedge shots, you're probably going to have to replace those sooner than some of the other clubs in your bag. So don't necessarily look at it as, oh, I've got to change all my grips at the same time. Sometimes you might have to look at some that you use more frequently, maybe for practice, and change those up as well. All right, playing golf for 2 years and I don't have a lot of money for lessons, but I want to learn more about the game. Is there an area I should focus on to help me score better? Well, I think that's a softball. You want to hit that one?
I you could say putting is probably the easiest way to do it, but there's a lot to do, and it's a hard question to answer. Ooh. If you're looking at the individual. If there's just one area, it's putting. You know, you can come play golf with me one day, and if I shooting the 70s, I probably made a ton of putts. So putting is the easiest way. A lot of people don't go the putting green. Work from the green backwards probably is your best way. And then just course management. The amount of stuff like this weekend, the amount of times I literally said to myself, you are so stupid. Like I've carried a bag for professional golfers before and know like what they need to do and make the decisions. And then I go out there and I'm like, oh, 150, what, whack? Oh, there's a bunker there. I should have taken extra instead of less. So, just take your time. Just think about where you don't want to be and try to make the right decisions. But if you only have one, putting for me.
Yeah, driver's sexy. Everybody wants to hit it further, but when it comes down to it, you're not going to be using that driver as much as you're going to be using the short game clubs, whether those your wedges or your putter. They're going to make up probably, you know, half your score. Definitely that might be the focus. Start there and work your way back. I mean, ideally, if you're out and teaching a young junior to play, you know, I'd teach them starting at the green and work their way backwards and then go from there and they'll score well that way. And you mentioned that game management too. There's something that a lot of people neglect is getting the opportunity to maybe take a playing lesson, you know, with a caddy would be a good way to do it as well, for somebody to manage their way around the golf course and to learn how to score that way, not just by the shots, but to save shots as well by managing their game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, on to number six. What tournament do you expect Tiger to play first? Well, there's a lot of speculation on this one. There's some betting going on about this one. What's your take as far as which event we're going to see Tiger at first? And obviously, it's not going to be Colonial.
Yeah, so it's not this week, but there's speculation that at the RBC Heritage, which I believe is next week,
correct,
that you could be seeing him. I saw a great tweet that said something along the lines of, can you imagine being so good at golf that people are tracking where your boat goes?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's Tiger they're talking about there with his yacht or whatever. I don't even know the name of it. Something
privacy.
Like privacy joke. For me, I actually don't think it'll be the RBC Heritage. That just seems odd to me. Like, when was the last time he played the RBC Heritage? I get it. We're in a different world. I wouldn't be surprised if it's the Memorial.
Yeah.
Go play the Jack's Tournament. He didn't play last year, obviously, due to injury. And just kind of taking it easy after the Masters win, which, you know, it's still crazy to think about that Tiger Woods won the Masters last year. But for me, I don't think this changes much for him. Yes, he wants to put himself in a competition. I think the match last 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was now, just showed how dialed in he is right now, and that maybe he's like, hey, that 83rd win would sure feel nice. Maybe we see him at RBC. The odds are saying that. If that's leaking out, there's a reason for that. But for me, if I was a betting man on it, I'm going the Memorial.
Yeah, I like Memorial too. Heritage at Harbortown, that'd be an interesting course to watch him play from a game management standpoint. I'd love to see him go and tackle that like he did the Open Championship that he won, where he just hit stingers off the tee. That would be a great place to do it, but you're not necessarily going to win that way. It would be nice to see him at the RBC Heritage. That'd be a great boon for RBC. It'd be great for sports fans, obviously, to see that right away next week. But Memorial is probably the favorite. Something very familiar to him. Jack's Place. I'm going to go Memorial as well. Although, I'm not tracking his yacht, so we'll see from there. All right, last one here. I'm going to tick on down and see where we're at. In 2003, Annika Sorenstam played at Colonial. Which LPGA Tour player would you like to see play a PGA Tour event? I'm assuming they're talking about playing at this PGA Tour event, maybe at Colonial.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say this now to everyone listening. Stop asking these questions. I answer the same thing every single time.
I think we've said this a few times, yeah.
If it has the LPGA involved, I want the best personality involved and somebody that's going to embarrass the guys by just bombing it past them. Give me Angel Yin in every single event. I don't care. Like, I don't even care if she's not the number one player in the world or anything like that. She's hilarious. She bombs it. She's a stick. Give me Angel Yin every time. I'm sure people like Brooke Henderson because of, Canada. I get it. Brooke is one of the best drivers of the golf ball. She doesn't hit it nearly as far as Angel does. Like, this is just, it's Angel Yin for me every single day of the week. Just stop asking if this is, if you just want me here. Maybe is Angel sending you these questions?
Maybe she is. Yeah. Maybe we need to get her back on the podcast as a guest again and ask her if she's sending this in all the time. She would definitely be one of the top ones for me. The other one I might be interested to see would be Arya Jatanagarn if she hit driver. Again, player that goes,
right? Like, yeah, she can get away with not doing it when they're playing a lot of LPGA events because of the length of the course, but you would have to on the PGA.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd be interested. I don't know if she's a more quiet personality. So I think from an entertainment standpoint, I think you're on the right vein as far as watching Angel do it. But Aria would be someone else that would be interesting to see as far as an LPGA Tour player playing a PGA Tour event. All right. Thanks to everyone for those mailbag questions. Keep them coming in. We really, really appreciate that. Angel, don't send that question in again. And we look forward to hearing more of your questions next week.
Yeah, I'm reaching out to Angel and seeing what's up with all these questions at some point. Maybe Angel is listening. Maybe she's looking at getting a tip of the week from the pro. And this week has to do with wind play, which might come into play this week because it looks a little windy down in Texas.
Yeah, you know what? Wind play is always tough for a lot of people. I mean, here's the thing. We train a lot, especially up in Canada here. We train in the wintertime in indoor simulators. And, it doesn't matter what the simulator says. It's not dealing with the same conditions as far as wind when you get out and play. And a lot of people don't really know how to adjust as far as wind is concerned. One thing they should understand is that, headwinds can actually hurt almost twice or sometimes more than tailwinds. And I think a lot of people treat them as equal, and I won't delve into the physics of it because there's really not point of getting into lift and drag and talking about the Magnus effect and all that stuff. I don't want everybody to go to sleep. But look at it this way. If you're a PGA Tour player and you're going to hit a 6-iron that goes, carries 184 yards, in a 10 to a 10 mile an hour headwind, that will only carry about 166. Into a 20 mile an hour headwind, 143. If you're doing a 10 mile an hour tailwind, it will travel about 198, and 207 downwind by 20 miles an hour. So there's a greater effect of this headwind. So always make sure into a headwind where the ball is going to fly shorter, it's going to fly higher and land steeper. And it's not because there's more spin. It doesn't necessarily do that. It's just a number of things that happen. use more club. Really comes down to be very generous. You know, more times than not, you see a player go and they try to deal with the wind. They try to hit the ball harder. And as a result of it, they swing faster. They create more friction. That creates more spin on the ball, launches it a little bit higher, and then you even magnify the effect even more. So be generous with yourself. Take one, two, three extra clubs, whatever it has to take. I mean, I just gave you numbers for PGA Tour players. You're not a PGA Tour player. So, you know, take a lot of extra club, be generous, especially into the wind, and you'll be a lot better off, and you'll have a lot more putts that land on the green into the wind rather than being short of it.
I love it. I think that's it happens all the time. I see so many guys and girls, you know, they just, the ego takes over. Nobody cares.
All the time.
Yeah. Nobody cares what number you hit, what club you hit into the green. Doesn't matter. Well, I think that's it for this week. Episode 69. Isn't that nice? Thank you again to Lawrence Applebaum for coming on the podcast. Thank you again to our title sponsors, Adidas Canada. Make sure you go check out that Code Chaos Canada shoe. What a cool shoe. Can't wait to get my feet into those. And thank you everyone for listening. Thank you everyone for keeping the conversation going. Let's make sure we're being inclusive on the golf course and bringing more and more people to the game. This is a great time for golf, as Lawrence talked about. And you know, let's take advantage of it. This is a game we love. Let's show that love to other people. Thank you everyone for listening. But before we go, one last thing: the Flagship Open field is filling up, and it is filling up fast. If you haven't signed up yet, head to flagstickopen.com. Sign up. You're going to get a great package from our friends at TaylorMade and Adidas just for signing up. I can't wait. August 15th and 16th at Equinel Golf Club. Again, if you haven't signed up yet, get to flagstickopen.com. And who knows, maybe you'll do well and you'll get to do a feature interview with Scott and I. Isn't that one of the main selling features for getting people signed up, Scott?
I would think so. I think that's what everybody strives for. You want to be on the Tee Talk podcast.
You should be. All right, folks, if you haven't signed up, make sure you do again. One last time, flagsopen.com. And one last time, thank you, Lawrence. Thank you, Adidas. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back next week. Yeah.